Hello, you're listening to People, Pets, and Vets with Dr. Brad Miller and registered veterinary technician Angel Martin.
Hello.
A little slow, but each week we bring you current events and news in the veterinary industry and share our thoughts and perspective on how they impact us in our animal hospital. We also try to give you an inside and behind-the-scenes glance at our clinic and the people in it. This episode 77 is being brought to you once again by Georgia Veterinary Associates, a family of animal hospitals caring for your family pet. So,
yes,
we're in Lawrenceville, Georgia.
Mm-hmm.
Beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
Not snowing as it is in Colorado, or was.
It's snowing in Colorado?
Yeah, they like Monday-ish, they had record high of 103 around Denver. And then today, there was snow on the ground.
Again in Denver.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
So, super crazy.
They skip fall altogether, huh?
I guess, yeah. So, I think the ground was so warm that all the snow melted off. But anyway, yeah, kind of weird. We're fortunate to be quite stable here. It's starting to warm back up, but I am ready for fall.
Well, we're at least in a place that we get to see all four seasons,
yeah,
right? Like there are some places where it's hot all the time, cold all the time, or you kind of get three of the four.
Yes.
So
all four seasons, as was the case in Texas where I used to live as well. So last week's word of the week was, I don't even remember. The previous was Yupnik.
Adipy. We talked a little bit healthy pet, happy life. I don't know that we actually dedicated one of those words, but we talked about pruritus. We talked about adipy.
Yeah.
We talked, I think you had written down seborrhea, but I don't think we actually went there.
What does seborrhea mean?
Flaky skin, dry flaky skin.
Yeah, so it's actually, I believe, I don't have the dictionary opened up, but I believe it's excessive oil produced from the oil-producing glands of the skin.
Wow, so you like were looking at me as if I was like correct a little bit, and you were just gonna like.
So there is seborrhea oleosa and seborrhea seca.
Okay,
you're describing seborrhea seca, which presents as excessive oil on the skin, which is like a dry, flaky. I'm gonna say butter-like, Crisco-like. Does that make sense? Like the congealed oil.
The viscosity, I guess, of like these flakes, yeah, is what you're saying?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So versus...
like dandruff, which is like a dry flake.
Yeah. But that's seborrhea seca. Seborrhea oleosa is just oily, kind of stinky. Feels like you've got olive oil on your skin, on your fingers when you touch their skin.
So in the sense that I said flaky skin, I was correct. With the dry part, I was incorrect.
Right.
Because
you were describing oleosa seca, not oleosa.
Oleosa. Seborrhea.
Or seborrhea. Yeah. Seborrhea seca versus seborrhea oleosa. So these words get quite confusing, especially late in the day.
Sure. Yeah.
So anyway, let's jump into news, I guess.
So I have one thing. We talked before on this podcast about like Beyond Meat and the whole climate change and that kind of thing. I read recently in the AHA Trends magazine that what they're calling futurevores, right? So you have like a carnivore and omnivore, but they're calling them futurevores. In essence, there are pet food companies or human food companies that are kind of also kind of coinciding with pet food companies to generate more plant-based or meat alternatives for pet food. And I thought that was super interesting.
Yeah. I'd not really thought about that. I read the same article. It makes sense.
It does and it doesn't. It does because of like majority of our dogs, kind of tying back into last week's episode, we were talking about they have either atopy, which is your environmental allergies, or they're going to be allergic to the proteins in the diet, right? We kind of went there when we said that most people want to put their dog on a grain-free diet, but that's really not the problem. That's not what's causing them to itch. It's the protein.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so I think if you take away those chicken and beef proteins and kind of make a meat alternative diet. It'd
be interesting.
It would be interesting.
I think I have no idea what is in like the Impossible Burger meat patty, but I'm thinking soy.
I think it mostly is soy.
Plant-based protein. Mm-hmm. So,
but remember last year we talked about like the cricket or the insect proteins as well?
Yes.
Insect diets. So I definitely think the technology will catch up to everyone's thoughts and ideas, and we will see a meat alternative diet for pets probably sooner than we think.
Yeah, we've been talking the last couple of months that, I mean, we've always known pets are family members, but now they are really like family members, it seems. And
for
so
sure.
I think the more that we humanize them, the more the diet will be influenced by, you know, by our thoughts and perspective, right or wrong. So that'll be super interesting. We, this past week, had a consultation call with one of the leading veterinary accountants who works with the, I guess, vets nationwide. And he brought up, he being Terry O'Neill, brought up something that I guess I had not thought about, but the minute he said it, it made perfect sense. The prediction is, what was it, within the next 3 to 6 months, up to 40% of...
I think it was 63%.
Was it 63?
Yeah, because it was pretty astounding. No, I was surprised.
60% of pets, which I think are going to be mainly dogs, are going to be...
That were adopted during Corona.
During coronavirus pandemic will be surrendered.
Yeah, that's actually pretty devastating and pretty sad. You know, we've talked about this a lot on this podcast about the, I guess, the majority of people running out and getting a pet during the pandemic. I feel like, gosh, there was someone recently, in my life that had said that their daughter just got a puppy. And I was like, oh gosh, you know, like, I feel like everyone's getting puppies. And she was like, oh no, but she works at home and she's going to be able to train the dog.
She's going to be fine for the next 8 months.
But I didn't really go there with this person. And I, if you're listening, I do forgive you or please forgive me because I forget exactly who I was speaking with. But, you know, I didn't really say anything in the conversation either, but I was just thinking like, oh gosh, you know, like, everyone thinks it's a great idea right now, but then what do you do when you take these, when you go back to work and your dog is now at home? So we've started to see some articles in our veterinary stuff kind of pop up with the separation anxiety or corona anxiety, if you will. Mm-hmm. Return to work anxiety, I think is really what they're calling it. But I really think that it's kind of like a thing to do. And I'm hopeful that it's not, but with his source saying 63%, that's just devastating.
Yeah, we'll see. I don't personally think it's going to be that high. It may be 20, 30, 40%, which is still way too high because people have no idea what their lives are or what's in store moving forward, like with their work life. But yeah, that's going to be really, really sad if that happens. The shelters and rescue groups have gone from an overabundance of animals to be adopted to
having nothing,
to having not many to adopt. And yeah, if it goes back the way it was,
they're going to be inundated and overrun again. Yeah.
So time will tell. I guess that's kind of Corona, right? Time will tell.
Of course. Of course.
So every day is a new day, or it could be the same day. So
speaking of magazine articles, since you're not going to bring it up, can I brag on myself for just a minute?
I was going to bring up the veterinary nurse practitioner. What's the name of the magazine?
It's from NAVC. So the North American Vet Conference. They publish a magazine called Today's Veterinary Nurse.
Okay.
And so in there, there's a column, kind of, it's called What Moves You. And so they reached out to me earlier this year and asked me to kind of put together my story in regards to the CARE Fund. They had followed me from the last year's 2019 mm-hmm. American Hero, Humane yeah. Hero Nurse Awards. And so I don't know, I feel very proud, I guess. I'm super happy that I can put the clinic out there and put what we do with the CARE Fund out there. Basically, it was all about this one dog, specifically Oakley, that I feel like we impacted pretty significantly. He's our biggest feature,
success
I guess,
story,
success story. because he had a very traumatic incident happen to him, and now he's living a happy, healthy life.
In Canada, eh?
In Canada, eh? We have lots of success stories. You know, we recently adopted out two kittens this month, essentially, in September, with our care funds. So we do have a lot of success stories, but he's kind of our biggest famous one, if you will.
That we've been recognized for on national level. Yeah. So, no, that's a great article. So, again, that is today's veterinary technician.
No, today's veterinary nurse. So the whole nurse technician thing is kind of still out there. There are some folks in the industry that think the word nurse should be used more. There are some folks in the industry that feel like technician should be used more. I currently don't really have an opinion. I mean, I do on both sides of things, but I don't have an opinion one way or the other. Does that make sense?
A strong opinion, yeah. too.
So I can see both sides, but I'm not pro-tech or pro-nurse at this point in my life.
Kudos to you. And the article is very good. I think bragging on ourselves, the title picture is me looking at a dog's eye with you holding it on one of our treatment tables or something.
Yeah, it looks very medicinal.
Clinical. Yeah. Yes. So, anyway, good job. We read this past week that Dr. Pam Nichols is the new AHA president, which American Animal Hospital Association, all of our clinics are accredited by AHA. She is someone we have met in the past at AHA meetings. I guess the last Denver or no?
The last was Indianapolis.
Was Indianapolis.
The time before.
The previous one was in Denver and was supposed to be in Denver early October, but...
Again this year, but
yeah, it's going to be kind of a virtual meeting, so
yep.
We may or may not attend, but congratulations to her. She is in VMG, our veterinary study group, and... I mean, we knew she was on the board. You didn't realize she was president-elect.
Yeah, I didn't, actually.
I think Adam Hecko is going to be the president-elect this year, and so he'll be coming in as president next year.
Oh, wow.
So
that's exciting.
Yeah, cool.
I like Adam a lot.
Dr. kudos Adam. To them. In AVMA Smart Brief News, there were just a couple of interesting stories. One talked about a pet wellness clinics in Indianapolis. Sounds kind of familiar.
Mm-hmm.
That they are using AI, artificial intelligence, to read out their chest rads, which we have been approached by three or four reading groups, radiology groups, to use their AI services. Interesting, it's only thorax, not abdomen.
Yeah, so I think the group that we have that has approached us is the same way. It's only thorax at the moment.
It's only thoracic cavity, and it's because there are a set number of parameters that they can, I guess, put in their algorithm that's either normal or abnormal. And this news story quoted actually the group they're using, only 15. And so I'm thinking I'm probably better than AI on those 15 parameters. It's the one-offs that we send all of our rads out for to make sure we're not missing.
So we send all of our x-rays out for a radiologist interpretation as a standard of medicine. And I think a lot of people in our vet space essentially send them out when they're unsure.
When they're unsure. But we want to make sure
Exactly.
much every time.
Yep. So I think they only send them out when they're unsure. And so I think essentially when they use AI, it is my understanding of the whole point of it at this point in time is that you get a very quick response.
Yep.
But then you also do get a radiologist interpretation. It just may take 12 to 48 hours.
I think you actually have to request that.
Oh, really?
I mean, for a nominal fee, you get the AI. You can have a radiologist review them for a different nominal fee.
I wasn't under that impression. Yeah. I thought it was like your interpretation fee included your AI.
They're all a little bit different. Everybody's positioning themselves a little bit differently. But
the reason I would think that it's the way that I'm kind of saying, and I totally may be wrong, but don't you think that if you have an AI company that you want more studies... You want to offer it all AI free.
Because you have to do nothing. You've got your platform built. The RADs come in. They're reviewed. And an interpretation is put out based on what we're seeing. This is normal. This is abnormal.
Your fee for AI is turning people off. Why would you have a fee? I would think that you would AI included in everything. And then, like, if you wanted a radiologist, it would be a fee.
No, it's like $15 for that versus $75 to have a radiologist review it. So
I suppose
it's using artificial intelligence. And I mean, that is the way of the future. I think we're trying to become more efficient. We're trying to utilize our technology.
So my understanding is AI is the standard of medicine in human imaging at the moment. Probably.
I don't know. I've not heard that, but it does not surprise me if that's the case.
I'm pretty sure that they have AI algorithms that read out both your x-rays and your CTs, like in the ER specifically. And then they do have a radiologist, interpret them as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. So anyway, interesting. Speaking of AI, we have a SediVue, which kind of uses facial recognition technology to analyze a urine sediment to look for red blood cells, white blood cells, bacteria, different types of crystals. And so, again, it's kind of slowly making its way into veterinary medicine.
Did I tell you that SediVue actually has now what they call a bacterial confirmation kit that comes with it? And so essentially, this facial recognition, it was only able to see cells, essentially. So your squamous cells, your red blood cells, your white blood cells, and crystals. But if it was seeing things like bacteria, it would just suggest that they were there. And then they told you that you should make a smear yourself to truly identify those.
But now they're making like a lysing solution gets rid of everything other than the bacteria.
I think. And so that the machine can only recognize the types of different bacteria there. I think that's super interesting. We do have that kit, so we'll see how accurate it is for us in the coming weeks.
Yeah, we were super skeptical of the technology and kind of the workflow. As Chris Lewis knows, our IDEX representative, but we did decide to bring it in, and I think I'm relatively happy with it at this point. So, I guess Valley Fever, did we talk about the possible coccidiomycosis bone osteomyelitis case last week or not?
We did not.
Okay, so in the news this week, there's a vaccine on the market, kind of like COVID coronavirus vaccine. It may be available in 2020 or 2021, but this vaccine is against a systemic fungal disease called coccidiomycosis. And so if you live in the Phoenix Valley, it's known as Valley Fever because it's very prevalent there. This fungus lives in the ground, and as they are disturbing the dirt with their building projects or renovation projects, it kind of comes to the surface. And I never really thought about it exposing people because we only deal with animals to get exposed, but this potential vaccine is for people. And I just thought that was kind of cool and very relevant with coronavirus. This Valley Fever disease has been around forever. And it's just kind of cool that they being, I'm assuming, researchers are kind of on the brink with finding a viable vaccine.
So the article that you're looking at, it says that it affects at least 10 to 15,000 people annually, and it kills about 160 of them.
Sounds kind of like coronavirus, doesn't it?
That's kind of crazy. But on the other side of that, you talked about a case that we had here in the hospital. So did that dog get diagnosed truly?
Not yet. Biopsies are still pending, but that particular dog presented for a very severe lameness in the rear leg, and it wasn't knee disease, it wasn't hip dysplasia, but it appears that we have osteomyelitis or infection in the femoral neck, right below the hip joint. And it does not look like bacterial, does not look like cancer. I'm very suspicious it's fungal, which we don't normally see here in the Southeast, but this dog moved here 3 months ago from California.
Oh, wow.
So, yeah. So, we somewhat hope that's what it is, because even though it would be a very difficult treatment, potentially treatable if it's a fungal disease versus cancer.
So that's what I was going to suggest or ask next. So, that vaccine that they're looking at is for humans. That may be available in 2020, 2021. is there a vaccine for dogs?
No.
Okay. So basically, if your dog is diagnosed with coccidiomycosis, it's just a treatment option. It's not curative, as far as you're aware.
Well, like if it's a bone infection, that's really a deep-seated infection. So whether it's bacterial or fungal, that's going to be really hard to take care of.
Does it usually just affect the one bone that it's already infected, or does it like
it's
spread?
It's not that
or...
common to infect the bone. It typically causes more of a systemic disease.
I see.
There, and it's kind of an acute form, a chronic form. So very complicated disease. They just call it cocci in the Phoenix Valley. So, gosh, that was 1996 to 1997 when I practiced there. So I'm a little bit... out of practice with Valley Fever.
So, but let's break down the word because I think it's confusing me a little bit. So, coccidiomycosis, right? So, like, coccidia is a bacteria, and then...
I think cocci means round.
Okay.
So, cocci versus rods, bacilli.
Okay.
I don't really know how that applies to this fungal disease, and myco is fungal.
Okay.
And then osis is disease.
Hmm.
So, Dr. Stevens probably could tell us what it looks like under the microscope or some of the really deep stuff on it, but I'm sure.
But to your point, it sounds round.
It's a round, you know, purple staining fungi, not like a fungi, but fungi. So yeah, that's the nature. Cryptococcus, coccidiomycosis, blastomycosis, and histio, I'm butchering it. Those are the four major systemic fungal diseases that we see.
Cool.
So, okay. Anything else on your part?
I don't think so.
Okay. Sign us out.
Sure. Make sure to check in next week, guys, as we discuss more in the news and in our industry. Follow us on Instagram at People, Pets, and Vets. Make sure to subscribe to this podcast wherever you're listening to it. Follow all of our clinics on Instagram and Twitter. Check out our blogs on mygavet.com. And remember, without people, pets are simply animals.
It's histoplasma.
Did that just come to you?
Yeah, it just came to me. So, all right. Bye, guys.